You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
Do you care about workers and labor issues? Do you want to make a difference in our community for working people? Then join the Labor Radio team. Labor Radio is a weekly show that covers labor, social justice, and political issues that impact workers. And we need your help. As a Labor Radio volunteer, you will have the opportunity to report on important labor and social justice stories in your community, interview workers, activists, and experts, produce and edit your own stories. No prior experience is necessary, though a connection with labor is a plus. We will provide training and support. All you need is a passion for worker justice and a desire to amplify the voices of working people. To learn more, contact Volunteer Coordinator Adrian Rainey at 608-321-9583 or head online to WORTFM.org/volunteer to fill out an application. Labor Radio, a voice for workers.
Welcome to Worldview, your weekly source for news and analysis from around the world, right here on community-supported radio, WORT 89.9 FM.
Good evening and welcome to the Sunday, March 2nd, Winter Fundraising Edition of Worldview. I'm Lee Rowe, and I'm your host, and my number is 608-256-2001. Fundraising at WORT means a couple of different things. The first is that it is your opportunity to be the community in community radio. Last year, you funded 80% of WORT's operations with your donations. And thank you, thank you, and thank you. So, we really need you, which brings us to the second thing. We all need each other right now, and WORT works really hard to bring you the information you need to negotiate these uncertain times. Did you hear Esty Dunur and Bill Fletcher Jr. on a public affair on Friday? It's on the archive webpage, and it is great. That's WORTFM.org, the same place you go to donate. But this time, you click on the archives and find Friday and a public affair at noon. Boy, that's really good. They talked about how together, in community, we can stay informed and stand up for ourselves. And we can also stay entertained with WORT offerings of all kinds of music, comedy, and events. So please, do your part. Please call 608-256-2001. And, or to do it yourself, you can go to WORTFM.org. Or you can pledge on the WORT app if you have that. And if you don't have it, you should get it because it's really good. Go to your phone, go to your computer, go to your app, however you want to do it, and however much you can, please, please donate. And later in the program, we have an interview with Guy Fugop in Cameroon that Gil recorded via Zoom this morning. Fugop is the Africa organizer for World Beyond War, and we'll talk about his experience working with youth and communities for peace all around Africa and beyond. And Gil, do you have anything to add?
Well, I do want to remind folks to call that number right now as the news is
What's
going
that
on.
Number?
It's 608-256-2001. Or you can, perhaps might be easier if you're streaming us right now, to go to the computer and go to WORTFM.org, /donate, and you'll get right there, and it'll be really easy to contribute and become part of the community of active financial contributors if you're not already. Maybe it's time to re-up, or maybe you've never donated before. We'd love to hear from you if that's the case.
Yeah. Did you hear that someone, some very wonderful donor, has promised to match any new donations?
Yes, I had heard that. I didn't know that it was an extending throughout the drive, but yes. So if you have not donated before, your money will be doubled by a really...
Fantastic person.
A really grateful and generous person who has decided that if we get whatever new members we get, new contributors, he will match that.
Or she.
And if you haven't, even if you haven't given in 18 months, in a year and a half, you are considered a new donor. So if I'm talking to you right now, please call because your money will be doubled. 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org.
And now we have the news.
The Svalbard Global Seed Vault in Norway hosts the world's repository for specimens intended to preserve crop diversity in the event of disaster. Last Tuesday, Dr. Elian Ubilajaro, the chief executive of the Center for International Forestry Research and World Agroforestry, deposited more than 100,000 seeds from 177 different species from across Africa in the Svalbard vault. Ubilajaro said having a seed bank for the planet demonstrates how we can care collectively for each other and how we care for the critical biodiversity of our food systems. She said, quote, "We have areas in Asia, Africa, and Latin America that go from drought to wetlands, so there's a huge opportunity to learn from the knowledge of indigenous peoples to create the resilience we need," end quote. Ubilajaro also recommended recognizing the significance of women's roles in agriculture and protecting and prioritizing women's crops that are used to nurture future generations.
A report by the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime released Tuesday identified the core chemical compounds of Kush, a synthetic drug that has swept through Sierra Leone and the West Africa region in the past few years. The first known testing revealed that it contains either nitazenes or synthetic cannabinoids. Nitazenes are potent and often deadly synthetic opioids, and one of the nitazenes detected in Kush is 25 times more potent than fentanyl. Originally, Kush was shipped as a finished product, but now precursor chemicals are ordered from China via online sites and are combined in labs in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. Once combined, the liquid is sprayed onto plant material intended to be smoked and sold as Kush. Since it has become available, the report said that Kush has soared in popularity as deaths associated with it have also soared. The synthetic opioids and the cannabinoids within the drugs are highly addictive and have ravaged Sierra Leone in recent years.
China worked to strengthen ties with Bangladesh last week by hosting a 22-member delegation led by Abdul Moin Khan, a senior official from the Bangladesh Nationalist Party, the BNP. Khan described it as a goodwill visit initiated by Beijing, saying, quote, "It is unique because China this time has invited a team representing various groups in Bangladesh," unquote. Bangladesh is being led by an interim government following the resignation and flight of Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina in August after 15 years in office. Hasina has been living in India, and the Indian government has refused to extradite her to Bangladesh to face charges, straining the relationship between the two countries. This is the second such visit by the Bangladesh interim government to China, and appears to be another example of China and India jockeying for influence over other Asian countries. China is Bangladesh's largest trading partner, with bilateral trade amounting to around $24 billion, mostly in exported goods from China to Bangladesh, including 70% of Bangladeshi military supplies, according to the BBC. Pakistan is also warming to the new government in Bangladesh, providing ammunition to Bangladeshi security forces for the first time in five decades.
Caught between China, its largest trading partner, and the U.S., its traditional military ally, on Thursday, Thailand deported a group of at least 40 Uyghur men imprisoned in Thailand for more than a decade. Last month, the men made a public appeal to stop their deportation, saying they faced imprisonment and possible death in China. Lawmakers and international officials asked the Thai government not to deport them, fearing it would be a serious rights abuse. But under cover of darkness and with tight security, the men were moved to the Bangkok airport on Wednesday night, where a Chinese plane was waiting to fly them to their ethnic home in Xinjiang province. Thai police and security officials said at a news conference in Bangkok that China had given assurances that the men wouldn't face penalties or be harmed. They said all the men voluntarily returned after they saw an agreement requesting their repatriation and declaring that they would be allowed to live normally. China claims the Uyghurs are terrorists, but never presented evidence for the claim. Worried about a human rights charge, Thailand kept them indefinitely until Thai Prime Minister Pettongtarn Shinawatra met with Chinese leader Xi Jinping in Beijing last December.
A sweeping blackout in Chile left approximately 1.8 million households and businesses without power on Tuesday afternoon. The underground metro system in Santiago, which transports approximately 2.3 million passengers per day, failed as a result of the blackout, leaving thousands of passengers stranded in the dark below ground. The city deployed 150 extra buses to transport commuters, but the large number of people and the failure of traffic lights across the city forced many Chileans to walk home or hitch rides on the back of trucks. Patricio Rodriguez was a commuter forced to walk 9 miles to get home that evening. He said, quote, "People were driving the wrong way up the main roads. It was chaos. It was like the Wild West. It felt lawless," unquote. The Chilean government declared a state of emergency and imposed a curfew Tuesday evening, enforced by military and police. By Wednesday morning, power was restored to the majority of the city.
Nicaragua announced its withdrawal from the United Nations Human Rights Council this week, following a UN report accusing President Daniel Ortega of human rights abuses. The report stated that Ortega's government, quote, has deliberately transformed the country into an authoritarian state, unquote. Ortega has continuously held power in the country since 2007 and has ignored human rights reports from international organizations in the past. In 2018, Ortega's crackdown on anti-government protests led to the deaths of more than 350 people. Since November, Ortega and his wife, co-president Rosario Murillo, have unveiled extensive reforms which consolidate power under the president and eliminate independent organizations, according to UN experts. The UN report urges the international community to take legal action against Nicaragua and impose sanctions against individuals included in the report. Ortega has dismissed this report, as well as previous reports of human rights abuses, as falsehoods and slander.
The Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK's executive committee, declared a ceasefire yesterday, saying it was, quote, "all for peace and a democratic society," unquote. On Thursday, jailed PKK leader Abdullah Öcalan called on his group to lay down their arms and dissolve itself. On Friday, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan called the Kurdish leader's decision an historic opportunity and said that the two sides can now, quote, "advance towards the goal of destroying the wall of terror," unquote. Since 1984, the Kurdish-Turkish conflict has killed more than 40,000 people. The PKK has moved away from its separatist aims and instead sought greater autonomy in southeast Turkey and greater rights for Kurds. The last round of talks collapsed amid violence in 2015. Öcalan's appeal could have repercussions for the oil-exporting Kurdistan region of northern Iraq, where the PKK is based, and for neighboring Syria, which is emerging from a 13-year civil war and the overthrow of longtime President Bashar al-Assad in December.
One person was killed and nine others were injured yesterday in clashes between Syrian government forces and members of the Syrian Druze sect in the densely populated Christian and Druze suburb Jaramana, southeast of Damascus. Veteran Druze leader Wali Jumblatt said at a news conference today, "The Free Syrians must be cautious of these plots of Israel," and accused Israel and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of creating sectarian division and chaos in Syria. Israeli Defense Minister Yisrael Katz said that the Israeli army is on the alert to intervene militarily to protect the Druze if Syrian government forces attack the Syrian Druze. He said, quote, "We will not allow the extremist Islamic terrorist regime in Syria to harm the Druze," unquote. The interim leader of the Syrian administration, Ahmed al-Shara, had said previously that it is necessary to reach a social contract between the state and all sects in Syria to ensure social justice. He also called on armed groups to dissolve themselves, join the Ministry of Defense, and surrender their weapons. The Druze fighters had refused to hand over their weapons despite their leader's call to build a democratic civil state. And those are our headlines for today. And now I have a question for Neil Adams, who you heard reading the headlines with me. Neil, you're relatively new to WORT and Worldview. What did you think about what you've seen and heard at the station and on the show?
Yeah, so I grew up in a really small town in rural Montana, and I think that sort of taught me to really appreciate a strong sense of community, and that's sort of what drew me to WORT, is it's this fantastic community of passionate and creative people who share, you know, really genuine content, and I really appreciate that, and I'm glad to be a part of it. And that community, of course, includes our listeners as well, which are very important.
Absolutely. That's who we do it for, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's been great. Worldview is such a unique program because it sort of allows me to expand my horizons and hear stories about the global community that otherwise I oftentimes wouldn't come across. So,
and learn how to pronounce Erdogan's name, too.
I'm working on it, yeah.
No, you're great.
But yeah, no, I feel like it's really sort of allowed me to broaden my horizons, and it's been a wonderful experience with a lot of really wonderful people here.
Yeah, and so why do you think that people ought to send some money to WORT?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was a listener before I became a contributor here. So if you feel like me and really sort of value that sense of community, and if you're looking for a chance to give back and help this community continue to thrive, we would
call.
We would love to receive your donation.
608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org. And what other programs do you listen to on WORT?
I listen to a few of the music programs. I also used to work on Transparency Talk, which was, I believe, on the 6 p.m. news is when it aired. I was a part-time producer on that for a little while, which is always really interesting. It's one of those things that I just never would have, you know, even thought to learn about before I became involved with it.
But hey,
it's always
Neil,
fascinating.
You're the producer of Transparency Talk. Oh,
yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. No, but it was really fascinating. Great people, very knowledgeable. Yeah, it's just another one of those things. You know, a lot of the music that we listen to here, I never would have heard otherwise. It just wouldn't occur to me, or I wouldn't know where to find it. Same with a lot of the news content and the talk shows. It's things that I wouldn't discover elsewhere.
Gil, what do you listen to? I know that you like Letters in Politics.
Yeah, I listen to Letters in Politics even when it's not on WORT, from KPFA. But I listen to Democracy Now. I often listen to not every day, but the Morning Buzz and the Public Affair. So mostly the news programs. And I guess my favorite music program probably is Mud Acres on Friday. Friday, that mix of bluegrass music that Chris Powers provides is really something.
Yeah, we have some amazing DJs here. So if you appreciate anything at RT. You don't have to pledge specifically for Worldview, although, you know, we'd like you to. But just for WART in general, please call 608-256-2001 or go online to WORTFM.org. And I guess it's about time we had Gil with our first longer story.
All right.
Back to the news.
A February 15th post by the U.S. Department of Government Efficiency on the social media site X and related comments by U.S. President Donald Trump caused a week of public debate in India. The post said, quote, U.S. taxpayer dollars were going to be spent on the following items, all of which have been canceled, unquote. And then it lists short descriptions of projects and dollar amounts. One item on the list was $21 million for voter turnout in India. President Trump made multiple public comments on the spending, including saying, quote, why do we need to spend $21 million on voter turnout in India? I guess they were trying to get somebody else elected. We've got to tell the Indian government, unquote. The implication that these funds were being used to interfere with Indian elections spurred comments by leaders of India's ruling BJP party. The Guardian quotes Amit Malviya, head of the BJP's social media, saying that Trump, quote, has confirmed that there was indeed an attempt to influence the Indian election and install someone other than Prime Minister Modi, unquote. Also quoted by The Guardian is India's Vice President, Jagdeep Dhankar, saying he was, quote, shocked. The democratic process of this country was sought to be manipulated to dent the purity of our electoral system, unquote. In the midst of these comments, the Indian Express newspaper issued a special report saying that $21 million was never spent in India for election turnout. USAID staff also denied the existence of such a program. The report did show that USAID had allocated $21 million for a nonprofit promoting political engagement in neighboring Bangladesh. The funding was to run for 3 years until July 2025, and $13.4 million had already been spent. India's opposition Congress Party accused the BJP of spreading, quote, fake news from America, unquote, while remaining silent as Trump and Musk insulted India. Congress Party spokesperson Jairam Ramesh said, quote, Elon Musk made a fake claim. Trump got confused between Dhaka and Delhi. The BJP should just answer this. Why did the BJP spread fake news about India's democracy? Unquote.
A constitutional reform banning the cultivation of genetically modified or GM corn passed Mexico's lower house of Congress last Tuesday with a vote of 409 votes in favor and 69 against. The country had previously placed legal restrictions on planting genetically modified corn. However, this initiative led by Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum is aimed at solidifying the restrictions in the Constitution. Modern corn originated from what is now Mexico, and the constitutional reform brands the crop as an element of national identity. The import and growth of GM corn is considered by local experts to be a threat to native species of corn. There are also concerns that much of the imported corn contains herbicides and pesticides that may pose risks to public health. Sheinbaum's constitutional reform initiative follows the decision of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA, dispute panel in December, which ruled that Mexico's restrictions on the import of GM corn violated the trade agreement. Following the ruling, Mexico repealed its restrictions on importing genetically modified corn. Experts say that this new reform will likely inflame trade tensions with the U.S., as it allows for restricting the use of genetically modified corn in Mexico, in addition to banning its growth. Some worry that Mexican farmers will not be able to produce adequate quantities of non-GM corn for Mexican consumers. The constitutional reform is expected to pass in the upcoming weeks as Sheinbaum's party holds the majority in both houses of Congress. However, some experts are stressing that more needs to be done to protect local farmers and native corn varieties. Tania Montserrat Tellez Serrano, a local expert on the issue, said, quote, "It is principally indigenous communities that have conserved the diversity of our native corn and seeds, which are passed down by families and communities to harvest the crop for consumption. The risk is that the imported genetically modified seeds will be integrated into these communities and that the native varieties will be lost," unquote.
The Israeli occupation forces injured several young men and arrested others during massive raids on cities and towns in the occupied West Bank, while more than 500 illegal Israeli settlers intensified their attacks on Palestinian towns. Today, the second day of the Islamic fasting month, Ramadan, hundreds of violent settlers under the protection of the occupation forces stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque and carried out provocative tours and performed Talmudic rituals in the mosque's courtyards. In nearby Palestinian towns, dozens of illegal Israeli settlers attacked Palestinian homes and vehicles, resulting in significant material damage that spread panic among residents. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society reported that Israeli forces stormed and fired sound grenades and tear gas at homes and shops. Six Palestinians were captured and three children were injured with live bullets Saturday evening. Earlier in the week, Israeli tanks stormed the Jenin refugee camp in a military escalation that is the first of its kind since 2002. Since the beginning of the comprehensive Israeli aggression against the Palestinian people in Gaza and the West Bank, the occupation forces have tightened their security measures at the gates of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the entrances to the Old City. Last Sunday, February 23rd, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced that the army will continue fighting in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian authorities warned that this operation comes within the framework of the Netanyahu government's plan to annex the West Bank and declare sovereignty over it, which may represent an official declaration of the death of the two-state solution. The Israeli army and settlers have escalated their attacks in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, since October of 2023, resulting in the martyrdom of at least 927 Palestinians, the injury of about 7,000 people, and the arrest of 14,500, according to official Palestinian data. With U.S. support, the Israeli occupation committed genocide in Gaza between October 2023 and January 2025, leaving more than 160,000 Palestinians killed and wounded, most of them children and women, and more than 14,000 still missing.
And that's a wrap of the news from around the world for Sunday, March 2nd, 2025. I'm Lee Rowe.
I'm Neil Adams.
And I'm Gil Halstead.
Sources we used to prepare today's stories were the Associated Press, the BBC, Manga Bay, The New York Times, Anadolu, Quds Wafa, Al Jazeera, The Middle East Monitor, France 24, Agence France-Presse, The Guardian, Reuters, and All Africa. And I was wondering, Gil, do you know about what, when donations are given, what they're used for here? I know one thing are the great soundboards that we have now.
Right.
And it really makes us and everybody sound a lot better. And I know it's great for the engineers. But now that we have the soundboards, aren't we done?
No, we're not done. I mean, we have the building in which all of this goes on still needs to be upgraded and repaired in certain areas, especially the roof. And we need some work on the windows as well. We do often have leaking going on in the basement at different times during the year when we get lots of rain or snow. So those are things that are on the agenda for spending money on. But on a regular basis, of course, the money goes to pay the salaries of the staff And to make sure these headphones we have are working, we go through headphones pretty quickly here, and we have to keep buying new headphones. And the equipment that the news staff that goes out into the community here and around our area to cover news stories, that audio equipment needs to be maintained and sometimes replaced. So there's plenty of places where the money that listeners right now could be contributing to by calling us at 608-256-2001 or going online to wortfm.org/donate.
Well, I think it's pretty cool that for almost 50 years now, we've actually maintained a radio station like this. Volunteer run for a long time, and then a few staff members, then a few more. Now we have a good solid staff, and I don't know, I think they must just really like it a lot, because I don't imagine their salaries are enormous, but
right.
But they do have a union, which I find to be really great. We put our money where our mouth is.
And I think that it's important to remember that we've lasted this 50 years because of support from the community. From the very beginning, Fund Drive was put on to actually get the station on the air in the first place in December of 1975. And that's just continued. I mean, all public radio stations and community stations have to deal with this on a regular basis. But WORT has done it by creating the kind of community that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And you are part of it, those of you who are listening to my voice right now. So call us, 608-256-2001, or go online at wortfm.org/donate.
And we're going to go now to our interview.
Welcome to this special Winter Fund Drive edition of the Worldview feature for March 2nd, 2025. Before we launch into today's interview, I want to encourage listeners to call in a pledge of support to this listener-sponsored radio station, WORT. That number to call is 608-256-2001, or you can go online to wortfm.org/donate. We are the only radio station bringing you a weekly wrap-up of news from Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East here in the Madison area, and we depend on your financial support for the lion's share of the money that we need to stay on the air and bring you programs like this. So please call 608-256-2001 or go online at wortfm.org/donate. Now, for today's show, we are fortunate to be able to talk with Guy Fugap, who is the Africa organizer for World Beyond War. World Beyond War is a nonprofit organization founded in 2014 that has chapters around the world, including one here in Madison, actually. And they use educational, activist, and media work to advance the cause of ending all war and establishing lasting peace. There are chapter organizations all over the globe, and works with allied organizations, many of which are affiliates of World Beyond War. And we are fortunate, as I said, to have Guy joining us by Zoom today to talk about what the organization is doing in Africa. So welcome to Worldview, Guy.
Thank you for having me on this program today.
So where are you speaking to us from right now?
Yes, I'm in Cameroon, the city capital, Yaoundé.
Yaoundé. Okay. What's the weather like there today? It's still pretty cold here. We're in our winter pledge drive. What's the weather like where you are?
Yes, in Yaoundé, in Cameroon, you are starting a rainy season. It is raining all these days. The weather is not that good, but it is fine for many of Cameroonians who will probably go back to start cultivating their lands. Uh-huh. So it's a good time for many people to go back to the farms.
And so how and why did you get involved with becoming the Africa organizer? I understand that the first chapter of World Beyond War was established in Cameroon, but now you are the continent organizer. How did that happen?
So maybe a short history about the World Beyond War starting in Cameroon. I took a course of World Beyond War Environment, and it was a six-week course, and at the end of which I gave myself an assignment to make the movement of World Beyond World grow in Africa. Because during the online course, I was noticing that people registered, other students on the course, did not know much about Africa. There were a lot of confusions about what is Africa, where is Africa located, what are the main conflicts that are in Africa. So there were this kind of question raised online, and I had to answer some of them during the course. And as I said, I gave myself this assignment to make the movement of World Beyond War happen in Africa so that people can also understand the dynamics of conflicts that are in Africa and what can Africans do to contribute to the world, the world peace. And that is why I started the chapter in Cameroon. It was in 2020, in November. And we have the chance to be sharing about what we are doing, some activities that we are doing in Cameroon. We have networks in Africa where we could share what is happening in Cameroon as World Beyond War. And other countries, other people from other countries were interested, and they signed the World Beyond War Peace Pledge and wanted to get involved more, including starting chapters in their own country. And I was supporting them with this idea since I knew more the work of World Beyond War. And in 2023, that is 3 years after they started the chapter in Cameroon, we have to organize the first Imagine Africa Beyond War Peace Conference that gathered the existing chapters in Africa, the affiliates, and prospective chapters. And the conference was organized with, it was online with people coming from other parts of the world who joined the conference. And the interest that came out of this conference gave World Beyond War Global the idea to expand the World Beyond War work in Africa by hiring an organizer. And I was actually in the best position to have this position. So I starting in January 2024, I was officially hired as the Africa organizer of World Beyond War, the first Africa organizer of World Beyond War.
And so you are coordinating activities and keeping track of, and I assume in different ways, promoting the activities of chapters that have now been established in as many as 15 different African countries. I see a list here of Burundi, Nigeria, Senegal, Mali, Uganda, Kenya, Cote d'Ivoire, Zimbabwe, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Togo, Gambia, South Sudan, Ethiopia, Ghana, and Libya. It's not quite the whole continent, but almost, it sounds like.
Yes, there are not more because we have 54 countries in Africa. So we still have many chapters to create. So maybe I will remind that the purpose of my role as Africa organizer is to enlarge the membership of World Beyond World in Africa by organizing volunteer-led chapters, because the chapters you mentioned, they are volunteer-led.
Right.
So we also have to support chapters in organizing educational events, non-violent activism. At the same time, when we establish the chapters, we have to guide them on the vision of World Beyond, because the chapters are autonomous. They organize their work and activism as they wish, as it fits their national context. And my role is to make sure that what they are doing as part of World Beyond World work aligns with the global vision of ending wars. And to do that, we have to also foster collaboration between the chapters and the alliance organizations that are in their countries, now to strengthen peace movements and collaborate with World Beyond War staff at global level, and also with board members to foster educational events, other peace initiatives that are led globally.
And so looking at the You have a really informative website that I've been will be referring to that has a lot of information about what you've been talking about, and we can list off some of the conflicts that are going on in Africa that we hear about on our show here on World Beyond War on a weekly basis. We get a little updates on what is happening in terms of the conflicts, but often not so much about what's happening in terms of trying to resolve them and to work towards this goal that your organization is focused on, which is to abolishing war and finding ways to settle these conflicts peacefully. There's the civil war in South Sudan. There's the insurgency by Boko Haram in Nigeria. And I guess also in your country that it overflows there. And then in Chad and Niger as well. The conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is probably what we're hearing a lot about the most right now when we look at global news from Africa, the violence in the Central African Republic and the armed conflict in the northwest and southwest regions of your country, of Cameroon. And when I read through this and when we keep track of this on the show, I mean, the things that are being highlighted on your webpage, arms transfers and the proliferation of illicit weapons, increasing these conflicts and preventing consideration of nonviolent and peaceful alternatives. And so when I look at the campaigns or the activities that your chapters are working on, there's a range here, but maybe we could just go through some of them. I mentioned Sudan to begin with, and I see that in April, a couple of years ago, that you have begun a petition drive. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I see that you're encouraging people to sign a petition online to deal with that conflict.
Yes. So the conflict has existed in Sudan for some years, but the current phase of the conflict starting in 2023 is the most terrible of it, because the Sudanese people, they are suffering the horror of two leaders who are vying for power. We have on the one side the General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and the other side the General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, is his name. So the war in this country is affecting a lot of people. So we have more than 150,000 civilians who have lost their lives in those recent two years. And we have more than 12 million of people who have displaced because of this conflict. So there are lots of human rights violations. There are a lot of abuses. And as we have also noticed, the conflict is a sin of international, how I want to put it in the clear way. There are international actors involved in the conflict in Sudan. That is exactly why we designed the petition, because we noticed that the conflict of Sudan was one of the most neglected conflict or ignored conflict in the world. Because we could talk about other conflicts in some part of the world in Africa, but the conflict of Sudan was like not interesting too many. While we have governments of United Arab Emirates, yes, we have Ukraine, we have Russia, we have Iran. Those governments have an interest in the conflict in South Sudan. So with the petition that we design and ask people to sign, was precisely to ask the United Arab Emirates to stop supplying ammunition to the rapid support forces that are one of the side of the conflict. And Iran in this conflict is supplying drones to the Sudanese armed forces. The Russia and Ukraine are also using the conflict in Sudan to trade their weapons and supply military equipment, and also send troops in Sudan. So the petition is directed to this government in particular, because when you collect a number of signatures, we have to deliver these petitions to the governments of this country to ask them to to hand off Sudan, as we call the petition.
Right, hands off.
We believe this can, yes, we believe this can, well, we did that with another campaign, one of the chapters of Senegal who started these campaigns about the conflict in Djibouti, one of the smallest countries in Africa, but that hosts a lot of military bases, and it's military bases for 8 foreign countries. And yes, so we collected more than 2,000 signatures last year, and we delivered some petitions. For example, in Cameroon, where we have the embassies of France, Germany, China, United States of America, where we deliver some of these petitions, France. Yes, so there is kind of silence from these representatives of those states. And particularly what marked us is that the United States of America, they refused to take the signatures. And this is a sign that we need to force the activism and raising more awareness of the dangers that people are running around the military bases in this country and in other parts of Africa, because there are a lot of foreign military bases in Africa that do not ensure any kind of security to the people in Africa.
So a lot of your work is focused on bringing attention to the role that the larger world powers are playing in fueling the conflicts there. And your example now of the petitions in Djibouti to try to reduce or eliminate eventually all of the military bases that are there. But you've not gotten much response from, you mentioned particularly the United States, even refused to accept the petitions when they were presented.
Yes, it's happened because they don't want to talk about the military basis. But I think the situation have changed a bit because we are keep trying to bring attention on the situation. On the 23rd of February last month, we had World Beyond War aligned with other organizations in order to have organized a global day of action to close military bases. And in Cameroon, the chapter of World Beyond War and other civil society organizations working on peace and security, they gathered to discuss about the impact of the military bases generally and try to identify where are the military bases in Cameroon. And you could find from the map that World Beyond War designed from its research on the bases in the world, that in Cameroon, we have 6 bases. There are small bases, some drone bases, some for military cooperation. We have 6 bases belonging to the United States of America, all of them. And what the chapter did was to send a draft, a letter, and send it to the embassy again to tell them that we have discussed about the existence of the military bases, and we are overseeing some of risk having them, risk of fueling more conflict or putting more people in insecurity. And we sent the letter, and they accepted the letter this time and even signed to show that they have received the letter. And in the letter, we were asking them to give us a space to talk about it, to accept that we come to meet them so that we can talk about those bases and see what the possible ways using alternative way to make peace. Because what they will say is that the bases are there because they are using them for peace purposes. And we know how the use of weapons never guarantees peace. So we want to start a dialogue with the United States Embassy in Cameroon. So hopefully they will give us the opportunity to meet with them and to talk about alternatives to using weapons, military solutions to the conflict.
So there seems to be some progress there, at least an openness to have a conversation with the World Beyond War activists. That sounds hopeful. We're speaking with Guy Fubak, Africa organizer for World Beyond War. And I want to take a quick break here. This is a Pledge Drive edition of WORT, your listener-sponsored radio station. And we want to encourage you to support the station that's bringing you interviews like this. We're now going into our 50th year, and it's more important than ever to ensure that we continue to bring you the real news that you need and want from our community, our state, our country, and in this case, in our program in particular, from the world, and today from Africa, directly from Cameroon. So please give us a call at 608-256-2001. There are operators standing by. Or you can go online to wortfm.org and make your donation to the station there. Guy Fugap, it really sounds like you're involved in lots of different things there with the different chapters of World Beyond War. And I wanted to ask you about this. There's something called the Killer Campaign to Stop Killer Robots. Now, I understand war is going on, but how do the killer robots fit in? This is an effort being launched by your World Beyond War chapters in Cameroon, Senegal, the Gambia, Togo, and Nigeria. Can you tell us a little bit about what that campaign is?
Yes, it is an initiative that we have been involved since 2020 in Cameroon as the chapter of World Beyond War in Cameroon. And we joined this campaign because we took part in some events in Africa and in United Nations in Geneva to understand that there are powers in the world who are developing autonomous weapons. These kind of weapons that are able to identify targets and eliminate them in an autonomous way without any intervention of a human. These are weapons that can kill without any human control. And it is a serious moral issue because we cannot delegate the power to a machine to kill a human being. And we cannot, at World Beyond War, as we say, allow any weapon to kill a human being. So that's why we act in this campaign. And what we are currently doing is to advocate along with other campaigners who are in other parts of the world so that the states who are part of the convention on certain weapons can discuss and come out with a treaty or at least a convention that prohibits the use, the development, starting from the development and the use of any weapons that can operate autonomously. This is the global vision of the campaign. And our messaging at World Beyond War is to stop developing any kind of weapons. So the chapters of World Beyond War in Africa who are actually involved are the chapters in Cameroon, Nigeria, in Zimbabwe, in Gambia. Yes, these countries are actually involved, and they are actually engaging parliamentarians because we believe that if you want decision to be taken, including at the UN level, we have to involve the parliamentarians because they represent the people and their voice can count to influence this kind of advocacy that we are pushing for. So we are part of this global campaign, and we try to inform the media, the activists, that this kind of weapon can do more harm to humanity, that it is necessary to find more voices to condemn them so that at the end we can have a regulatory framework, a treaty that prohibits those kind of weapons. And it is the campaign that is in line with our vision to end wars, to stop the manufacturing and to stop the trade of weapons.
We only have about 4 or 5 minutes left in today's program. And so, Guy Fugap from World Beyond War in Cameroon, I wanted to just ask you about one other thing, that one other campaign you're involved in that has to do with educating children. Perhaps children are some of the hope for realizing eventually the World Beyond War goals of abolishing war by teaching kids about peace. And I see that you have chapters in Africa that are working on that now. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. Peace education is actually one of the key component of our theory of change. We believe that for a world beyond war, we need to start now by educating the youngest generation that will be constructing the world in the future. Our aim is to foster a culture of peace. And what we are doing in Africa, as we can see with the chapters of Burundi, Mali, Cameroon, they have conducting activities with youth in the universities and in high school with peace clubs. So the development of peace clubs is an interesting component that the chapters have started to educate the youngest about peace, about the values of tolerance, dialogue, and about the dialogue of how to live together, how to respect others' opinion. So the peace clubs are those space where the students, they meet after their school programs to talk about peace, to analyze the security situation of their countries, their communities, and try at use to identify why are their role in preventing the conflict of in their localities. And recently in Cameroon, the chapter was part of a project. And a part of this project, there was a guide that was developed for peace education. That's actually to teach education to students. So those in charge of using the guide are teachers, and the teachers were trained for that, to use this guide during their spaces, their time in classroom with students, to have some assignments and tasks that they can use to educate students on peace. So this kind of youth initiatives are multiplying within the African chapters. So, and at World Beyond War Global, there is the Peace Education and Action for Impact program that started in 2021 that has already educated a cohort of young people on a peace, and they learn peace. They try to develop a peace project for youth, implemented by youth, and that can contribute to changing, transforming the conflict in their communities.
We've been speaking with Guy Fugap from Cameroon, from the Africa Organizer for World Beyond War, on today's Worldview feature. Thank you, Guy, so much for joining us, and we hope that we can get back in touch with you again in the not-too-distant future to talk about new developments of what World Beyond War is doing across the continent. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me to this program. It was a pleasure being in touch today.
And that's Worldview for this week. So please call us at 608-256-2001 or go online to wortfm.org to pledge. And thank you to Guy Fugap. He's Cameroonian, and he is got a French name, Guy Fugap, for telling us about World Beyond War in Africa. And thank you to the Worldview Collective, Neil Adams, Sabia Tie, Chuck Benish, Andrew Karn, Gil Halstead, and Amitabh Paul for bringing international news to WORT listeners. And thank you to the WORT News and Public Affairs Director, Shally Pittman. And thank you to our donors. We don't have any particular donors to thank. So.
But if you call right now,
exactly,
we'll be sure to send you a thank you note. 608-256-2001. Support Worldview. And we also want to thank Ian's Pizza, who brought in some wonderful food to keep us going here at WORT. That's great when that happens during the pledge drive. But we really would like to hear from you, and we will take your donation now or even an hour from now.
Yeah, anytime, 24 hours a day. And we want to thank you for listening. And please call 608-256-2001 or go to WORT.org. www.wordviewtoday.org and pledge to support WORT. And please join us next week for a new edition of Worldview here on community-supported radio, WORT 89.9 FM Madison and WORTFM.org. And now stay tuned for Salamat.
السلام عليكم السلام عليكم السلام عليكم السلام عليكم.
In Arabic we say غبر يا تور على أرنك.
Translation: Hey bull, you're just getting dust on your own horns.
Better get cleanin'. Literally, this is what the literal translation. But what does that mean in depth? It is about عن الشخص الذي يسيء لنفسه. When someone powerful makes a hasty decision in an attempt to hurt others or to show off, but causes a small or large problem for him or herself. And so it's literally, it's describing